The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. Well, that music means it's time for another episode of Just Can't Not. This is part of our series of previews for the Rochester Fringe Festival. The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival happening September 9th to 20th in scenic downtown Rochester, New York. Go to RochesterFringe.com to find out all of the events. Also get the app so you can find stuff on the fly when you're out and about. And I have a guest here. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Evan Schloss. I am a producer and a player in Nerds in a Basement.
Yeah, and your show is on September 11th at 7 o'clock and also September 20th at 7 o'clock at the Focus Theater. Tell me a little bit about the show.
Sure. Nerds in a Basement is an improvised D&D performance. So sometimes when you go see D&D, if you're a geek and you like that kind of thing, you go and see people and they're kind of sitting around a table just playing the game. This is all acted out on stage, and it was kind of something that I came up with some friends, and we developed into a whole show. And we primarily play at the Focus Theater, which is a place I love and recommend, but we've also played at Improv Ammonium, and we've done Fringe before, things like that. So
yeah. So tell me a little bit about the Focus Theater. I don't know that much about it.
Sure. Focus Theater is a theater in the old Sibley building. Not sure what it's called now, but it is primarily for comedy, usually primarily improv, but they also do stand-up classes and have some big stand-up shows there too. It is one of the most welcoming environments that I've ever been in my life. All the people there and the owners are lovely and encouraging and welcoming and supportive. So they, you know, improv is something that always was intimidating to me. But going there at that place, I just felt so safe and supported that I just took off and I can't stop now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what I'm kind of interested in is, you mentioned that this is, so is this official, you're playing under the official auspices of like D&D, or is this on another platform?
We are playing very loosely with the rules of D&D.
That's fair. Which seems like that is a very, very much kind of a trend right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way that we take it, nothing is taken seriously. So yeah. If someone wants to come up and say, I cast Spell of Fishes, and that's not a spell that's in the thing, our Dungeon Mother, which is our version of a Dungeon Master, is probably going to roll with it and figure out some way to creatively make that happen.
We're going to figure out what is the Spell of Fishes.
Yes.
Which I think that's kind of an interesting way of taking it. So What I wanted to ask, you mentioned that this was an improvised version of it. To me, I always thought of you know, as somebody who's never really played, but the way I always thought of it was a lot of improvising by, you know, by the participants, with maybe, you know, the person who's hosting it having a plan or an idea or a path.
Yep.
But how do you separate, you know, what is what I would consider the normal improv that goes into doing a campaign or doing something else versus what you're regarding this as is more of an improvised thing?
Sure. I do think that D&D is by all means improv in general, as it's created. Like, all of the players are going to be improvising the whole time. Even the DM has to improvise. Even if they have a basic plan, they have to kind of come up with new things on the fly based on,
because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, wacky dynamics.
Yeah, you can't predict what participants and players are going to do.
Absolutely. So this, we take it a little bit of a step further in that the DM doesn't have a plan either.
Oh,
and
okay.
We ask the audience for what is the item that we're questing for. Usually it's like asking them, name an item that might be in a dungeon and or a dragon. And they name that item, and then we give it we ask for what kind of magic property it might have, and then the people will, we'll base what we're doing off of that. But it's all done on the fly. The other difference I would say is that we are all trained improvised comedic actors, so we're doing it on stage in front of people, not sitting at a table. We are acting out everything that we're doing. We are trained to be silly and yes and each other and just kind of go with whatever randomness and bits come up. So
I love that you used the phrase trained to be silly.
Yeah.
I think that's something I really appreciate. I often there's a sign sitting behind you on the wall that says no fun zone. So it is a it's a mark by a local, you know, street art person, who I absolutely love. I'm hoping to get a bigger version of that. And I often say I don't like fun, but I deeply enjoy things.
Mm.
And to me, I love the idea that you're training to be silly, right? It's the intent, right? You're trying really hard. You're practicing, you're doing that work to get really good at that.
Yes.
Versus hoping that it's going to work out.
Yes, it is a craft that is a skill that is honed, and at the same time, probably the biggest skill in being a good improviser is getting out of your head and not actually having to kind of think up what's funny and just try and be clever. It is often just kind of rolling with whatever's coming along, and really, so that's, you know, when they say, One of the kind of phrases of improv is don't think.
Yeah.
It's like learning to be silly. One of the things that's really freeing, has been beautiful for me, is just being able to have fun and not take anything seriously.
Yeah.
Because life is short, and why should I be, you know, sitting there heavily worrying about stuff? That's coming from someone who's a psychotherapist also. So.
Well, I think that's where the training comes in, though, is mm-hmm. that allows you not to think, because you've prepped your mind, you've prepped yourself for being flexible, for being uncomfortable, meaning you don't know where things are going to go, which is one of the things I love most about having conversations is where are you, you know, reading and reacting, paying attention to somebody's body language, you know, seeing what they're actually saying, not just what they're saying in the moment.
Yeah.
And looking to a step ahead without thinking about the step ahead.
Absolutely.
It's one of those things where when you talk to people who've done the work for you, you're like, oh yeah, it is really cool when you realize when you take a step back and you look at, oh yeah, I was doing that at the time, which is a very cool thing.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that's a craft that you had to develop as a podcast host, because what you're doing right now is completely improvised, and you're doing that with, I imagine today, I don't know how many people, but several people all in a row, and you're going to have to come up and just be on the fly.
Yeah. And I got to say, it has been really fun, because I've done, I think, 8 so far and for this series, and a lot of it's stuff I don't talk about normally, because my regular show is food and drink related.
Yes, which I would love to talk about too, if you want.
Oh yeah, that's my comfort zone. But this is the other stuff I love is like, hey, let's learn about what you care about. And what I'm interested in is when did you start getting into, participating in role-playing games?
Oh, sure. I've done role-playing games since I was a kid.
Yeah.
In elementary school, I remember us playing Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, I think is what it was. So it was like version 2.
Yeah, I was going to say it's pretty early.
Yeah. Also played Rifts and other random RPGs. And I've always liked playing RPGs in video games too. So it's kind of been a big passion of mine throughout my entire life. Improvising is something that I didn't start till about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
I've always loved that too.
Yeah, for sure. And especially, you know, when you see people who are really great at it, you're like, oh wow. That's the stuff I tend to gravitate to is people who are the absolute best at a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I listen to a notable podcast, like How Did This Get Made?
Mm-hmm.
And you're listening to Paul Scheer and Jason Mantzoukas improv together live. You're like, oh, right. These are like the funniest people when it comes to this. It's hard to get better than what they do.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, you are the fastest, funniest, most like incisive people. And I'm like, oh wow, this is amazing. And it's hard not to feel romantic about it.
Absolutely. No, I think that those people are so fun to watch. And when you see people at the top of their craft, it's kind of incredible. It feels like a magic spell or something.
It does.
And it's one of those things that's hard to train, because I think that you can do a lot to train yourself to get comfortable being uncomfortable, to just kind of wing it, to play along with whatever. But some people just have the fastest brains and they can just kind of think up the funniest things on the spot. And it's incredible when you can watch that happen.
Absolutely. So going back to when you started, do you remember what was, you know, how it got introduced to you? Like how you became familiar with it?
Well, yeah, I remember as a kid watching the original British Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh, really?
And that was something that I absolutely loved. I thought it was so funny. And then when I went to college in New York City, I went watched a lot of shows at the UCB Theater, and I thought, this is incredible. It's so intimidating, though, because there's no way I could ever do this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I moved back to Rochester, and my friend was like, hey, come with me to this like open jam thing at the Focus Theater, which used to be in some little tiny box at on the corner of like South Avenue. And I was like, okay, I don't know if I'll actually be good at this. And it was so welcoming and so safe. First game that we played, everyone, no matter what you said, had to respond with saying yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, so there's no wrong answers. I can be really, really silly. I don't have to be afraid to look stupid. And that was just really a fun, intoxicating feeling.
Yeah. So going back to when you were a kid with starting to play role-playing games, the connotation of D&D, you know, at the time, you know, I assume that was in the 80s at that point,
mm-hmm.
you know, had a, you know, there was a lot of negative connotations around it, you know, at the time. But did you find like your people through that too, that you were playing with and enjoying that?
Yeah. Well, I was lucky enough to kind of go to an alternative school where my parents weren't caring about that kind of stuff. And no one really believed that stuff. We were all, you know, all of our parents were kind of hippies and were pretty chill with that, which was great. But I think that that is a common thing that you hear from people who grew up back in the 80s with D&D, where people were like, that's satanic, you're practicing witchcraft and things like that. I've had friends, I remember a friend in high school that I was trying to get to be able to play, I think it was like Magic the Gathering back then, which used to not be...
Shout out to the early 90s. Shout out to 1993.
Yes, exactly. So I was trying to get him to play that, and he was enjoying it, but then his mom was uncomfortable because it was magic and that was against their beliefs. So, people have strange ideas about it, but really it's people getting together and being silly, and geeky people hanging out in a basement playing games is about the safest thing a kid could do. They're not out doing drugs. They're not out on the street. They're not getting hurt in sports. They're, you know, you
maybe really a little too much sugar and caffeine, but you know what? Yeah. What teenager doesn't doesn't enjoy a little bit of extra sugar and caffeine?
Fair.
So part of what I was wondering about that is seeing how it's received now. I didn't say really. I'd say the last, you know, really the big driver that I think started with the new Lord of the Rings movies in the early 2000s. But in the last 10 years, it's really exploded in the public consciousness. And I'd say the last five being that rapid acceleration of people being more familiar with it, it becoming more mainstream. How has that been for you to see that? Is that something that grabs you in a certain way?
Yeah, it's both. It's really interesting because certainly when I was younger, it was a niche thing. And there was that, like, I don't know if it's a coolness factor because it was pretty dorky, but it was a thing that was seen as dorky.
Well, there's a galvanization from not being a part of the mainstream, from being separate. There's a tightness from that that's hard to define.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, that shaped a lot of our identities. So that was like an aspect of who we were. But I think also, it's lovely that it's gotten popular. I mean, it's really interesting growing older and seeing all the things that I liked as a kid now becoming popular and coming back because now everyone's targeting to, you know, towards my demographic or something. But I'm thrilled that comic books and superhero movies and all of those things have gotten really popular and that improv has gotten more mainstream. And, you know, I say the more the merrier. I like that people are being weird. I like that, for me, the more people that are like this, the less people that are going to be, you know, jerks out in the world.
So. Yeah, because it's, I think it's always a fascinating thing too when, you know, the community is opened up when it had been insular for so long, and now you see it opening up, and there's always the risk of, you know, the risk in the mentality, right? Of, oh, we don't want to dilute what this is. We don't want to dilute the purity of it.
Yep.
And I see that in, you know, the community that my wife is involved with. She's involved. She's actually in Virginia right now selling at a furry convention.
Yeah.
And it is, they're reckoning with that all the time right now that, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger and more popular. There's more money. There's more demand for it. And the way I see it is it's inevitable, right? There's inevitable that it can't be the pure thing forever when you have 20,000 attendees and you're taking a whole convention center. Like, you can't do that and be pure and small at the same time. And you have to reckon with that.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think it can be sad when things that you like get shifted in ways that you don't really like. And at the same time, I don't really care about purity that much because I don't really believe in it as a concept. Whenever people start talking about it, it makes me nervous, but I understand the sentiment of, like, it's sad when things feel like your ideas and things that were precious to you are diluted. But also, I want to, you know, really make it clear to any of those nerds out there that are, you know, upset by things, like, it doesn't matter, you know, none of this stuff matters. Everything's silly and your stuff wasn't perfect and pure, and don't be too precious about it because, I don't know, when people start hating on things and they're like trashing things, like, oh, this wasn't perfect. It wasn't exactly like it's supposed to be, like, or when people start trying to gatekeep who can be a fan of what, I really just, you know, hate that.
It's frustrating.
You know,
right?
It's like, everyone should be welcome to these things. I don't want to gatekeep. And at the same time, yes, I don't love the way the commercialization and capitalism messes everything up that it ever tries to touch. But yes, it's kind of inevitable too.
Yeah. And I love seeing, you know, I love seeing some of the creators and, you know, the organizations that have come up that are more creator forward. Mm-hmm. Those feel good to me. They feel like when you see, you know, the McElroys and you see those things and you see the one that's related to, why am I forgetting what it is? Is that Dimension 20? Mm-hmm. The
Dropout TV?
Dropout, yeah. Where it's creator forward and the creators are getting paid properly and that they've brought in people who are bigger celebrities. I saw WWE wrestlers in one of the recent ones.
Yep.
I'm like, how cool is that?
I love it.
And I remember a recent one that I saw. It was, I think, last year. It was a TikTok clip of an actress. I think it's Deborah Ann Woll, who was teaching her co-star from the Daredevil series, John Bernthal, about D&D. It was on his podcast. And he's just asking about, and he's like, she's like, do you want to try right now? And it's one of the most, like, to see it on her face, how excited she is to teach him, mm-hmm. and how receptive he was to just doing a tiny little thing. And it grabbed me emotionally too.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, she loved this her whole life. And she gets to teach somebody who by perception could be the broiest guy you'd ever see.
Sure.
And he was just open to playing,
yeah,
and really receptive to it. And like, it actually hit me pretty emotionally to see that and to see how that perception had changed.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. I love that. I love when someone is passionate about something and can welcome someone else into their world. And I really love that the perception has changed enough where hopefully there's a lot less bullying and, you know, hatred and things that can happen. The more these kind of communities can just, well, more people can be fun and weird and about the things that, and enjoy the things they like, and that other people can just accept it and encourage it, the better. So yeah, I think that's so beautiful.
Yeah. So when it's not Fringe time,
mm-hmm.
how does your, you know, practice of this go? Is this something people can go to? Is this something that's just done, you know, individually? How does your playing go when it's not Fringe time?
We usually have nerd shows every maybe 2 months at a Focus Theater. So people come see us there and we keep it up there. And we also practice at my house when we're not doing those shows. So we still, you know, want to keep playing, keep it fresh, be at the top of our intelligence and keep playing really well, coming up with new ideas, bringing in guests, all of those kind of things just to kind of keep it fun. So we just get together. We're all actually friends, so we can go and enjoy each other's company and be silly. And yeah, it's been a huge success. I've been one of the more popular shows at the Focus. And last year we sold out completely at the Fringe. So,
oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, it's got to be really heartening too.
It is. Yeah. I did not imagine that was going to be the case.
Yeah.
But it felt really cool that people came out to want to see our shows.
That's awesome. I think what I want to end up with, is there any current media things that are inspiring you right now? It doesn't have to be like specifically D&D, but is there anything right now that's inspiring the way that you're playing?
Well, you actually just mentioned Dropout TV.
And yeah.
I was just watching Game Changer this morning.
What were you watching?
The one that was this morning was one on sincerity, actually.
It
was,
I saw some clips for that.
And it was really, really interesting because you're like, hey, take these people who you throw them in a room and all they're going to do is throw jokes at each other constantly. And can they, in earnest, act things out or say things? And I think that that's, it was really fun to watch. And it's beautiful to see because, you know, when we're on stage being silly, I don't ever want to take things too seriously. And at the same time, when you're a character, can you act like your character really believes the things they're saying and means it? Because
yeah.
the more that you can embody something, the more you can kind of just be real and really act that out with physicality, with your facial expressions, with your tone, the more moving it is, the more believable it is. And that's one of the things when I'm doing improv is feeling like the more you can commit to something, the more people will eat it up.
Yeah.
So that's something that I have been watching. I don't know what else off the top of my head
that's a great one too. Like yeah. I mentioned, it's kind of an inspiring company right now.
Yeah.
Because it really is creator first, and you see the people who are doing it and how passionate they are
yeah.
about it. And yeah, there was a couple, I think there was one this season that one of the performers, they put on a whole Who Wants to Be a Millionaire show for one of the regular
right
for one of the regular you know, contributors, and they don't usually take advertisements. They took an advertisement for that show specifically to get him money so he could do more creative things. And I'm just getting emotional thinking about it, because it's that support.
Yes.
You know, that real support that comes from being earnest, being earnestly silly, training to be silly, training to do something cool. How do you beat that?
I think it's so beautiful that they do that. Their community is so inspiring and so lovely. You can tell that the people in that community actually are real friends.
Yeah.
They really care about each other. There was another show where Grant and Allie, I think, have to dare each other to do things so that they can try and make money for paying off their student debt. and it is both really embarrassing and painful to watch, but also so beautiful because they're, you know, it's their real friends, and you can tell that the people care. You can tell that Sam, who is like, the, you know, the owner of the company, really cares. And yeah, they do. They pay each other well. They care about treating each other well. They care about being inclusive.
Yeah.
It feels like a really supportive, great, safe space.
Well, if you want to go see a great performance, something that is for everybody, check out the Nerds in a Basement shows on September 11th at 7 o'clock, September 20th at 7 o'clock at the Focus Theater. You can go to rochesterfringe.com to buy your tickets. Before we close out, anything else that people need to know?
No, please get your tickets in now so that you can get in, because it may sell out again. Shout out to Sophie, our dungeon mother, because she holds the whole ship together as we kind of try and tear it apart. I promise it'll be fun and silly. And thanks for not kidnapping me.
And that is my favorite thing about any show, is making chaos. If you want to see some chaos of our own, come to the Lunchador Fringe event on September 13th at 3 o'clock at the downtown branch of the public library. Check out lunchador.org for all of the rest of the shows on the network. And we'll be back with more Just Can't Not on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
At Lunchador, the points do matter.